Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio.
Hello, hello, and a very warm welcome to Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio. I'm Dave Williams, and Tech Talk, of course, is your program, and we will be exploring all things accessible and inaccessible technology. If you'd like to get in touch, we always love to hear from you. The email address, of course, it's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And don't forget, of course, you can send us audio as well. We love to hear your voices, so do get in touch. Coming up this time on Tech Talk, Tasneem Arshad will be along with more iPhone tips. We'll be hearing from Derry Lawler and exploring ways in which you can make your kitchen more accessible. That's all coming up this time on Tech Talk.
Procter & Gamble are making a whole host of household items accessible using the NaviLens app. Here to talk about the scheme from Procter & Gamble, Sam Lateef, and from RNIB, Gareth Davis. Welcome both.
Hi, how's it
going?
Thank you. Sam, for people listening who might not be familiar, what is NaviLens and how does it work?
NaviLens is an optical marker. It's like the next generation QR code that can be detected from a distance through your smartphone. So you have to download the NaviLens app. Once you've downloaded and opened the NaviLens app, if the code is in front of you, which is either on a product or if it's in an environment near you, the code picks it up and then it can do three things. One, it can help you read all the information behind that code. So in our case, we've added it to some of our products. So you can hear the product information, what's on the front of the pack, what's on the back of the pack, what does the pack look like? All that information is in there. The second thing it can do is it can help you filter out stuff that you're not interested in. So imagine there are multiple products on the shelf with the code NaviLens on them. And if you're looking for a specific thing on the shelf, let's say we're on the shampoo aisle and you're only wanting shampoo that has sulfate-free, you can filter by sulfate-free, scan the shelf, and NaviLens will only read sulfate-free shampoos to you. So it filters out all the other things that you may not need. And thirdly, the really cool bit, let's say you can see five products on the shelf with sulfate-free shampoo and you want product number three. You can see the five products on your phone. You want a specific product with sulfate-free, let's say Pantene Growing Strong Shampoo. You've seen all the products through your phone, but now you don't know exactly where it is on the shelf. All you need to do is lift up your phone again and then the phone starts telling you, the NaviLens app will tell you where that shampoo is. It just says left, right, up or down. And when you're in range, it starts to beep. It goes beep, 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 beep. The closer you get to the product, the faster the beep. And then you can lift the product off the shelf by yourself as a blind person. It's a magical experience. It really brings you to tears when you do it the first time.
I mean, the big thing for myself and for RNIB is that the NaviLens technology enables blind and partially sighted people to independently not just locate a product in a supermarket, but access that information. Up until, you know, the last 18 months or so, when we've been collaborating with P&G and other brands and NaviLens themselves, blind and partially sighted people like us, we struggle when we shop. We have to ask other people for assistance. That might be a family member or someone in store. And even when we find the product and we get it home, we don't necessarily know what the ingredients are or even how to cook or prepare a meal from the product. So NaviLens instantly gives us access to all that information and also locating that product in store. And what's really cool about the NaviLens app as well is that on your phone, on your smartphone, the information is accessible in whatever accessible functions your phone is set to. So mine, for example, is really large print with a black background. But another blind person's, it may be the voiceover gives you that information. So it's really personalised information that's accessible through the NaviLens app. So it's a real, as Sam said, it's an absolute game changer in terms of technology.
And Sam, how many of Procter & Gamble's products now feature the NaviLens code? And how many do you think we might see in the future?
So today we have on the shelf our Pantene Miracles range. I believe there's 25 different unique Pantene Miracle products that have got that code on it. We also recently launched the most accessible laundry detergent box. It's called our EcoClick box. And we have the EcoClick in three brands, Bold, Fairy and Ariel. And all of the EcoClick boxes for all three brands has got the NaviLens code. Those boxes are more than NaviLens. They have a new tactile marker that we've put on the box next to the NaviLens code. It's in the shape of a kind of like a washing machine, a square with a circle, hollow circle inside. So you can feel that on the box. The box is also child safe, but it's easy to open for people with, you know, all kinds of disabilities as well, because children can't get their hands around the box, but adults can, and it's easy to open. So it makes the whole laundry experience much, much more accessible. But the NaviLens part, it's our first laundry product to have it.
Gareth, how did the relationship between P&G and RNIB come about?
Well, it's been developed over quite a long period of time in terms of, you know, RNIB, we work with a lot of different sort of global brands. And so we began to collaborate with Sam in particular from Procter & Gamble, P&G, I'd say about 18 months ago, 2 years ago, where we were talking, as I say, with brands around optical markers and NaviLens in particular, being this amazing new technology. And really, it was just a conversation with Sam, who sort of instantly saw the benefits of this to P&G consumers, as well as the broader blind and partially sighted community. So we supported Procter & Gamble, I think it was about a year and a half ago, in the proof of concept. So we worked with those guys and we did some testing in Wimbledon, say about 18 months ago. And that was just a really fantastic day. As Sam said, you know, people, the emotional response that people have when they first use NaviLens, it was really quite moving, actually.
It's actually a really cool story in that 3-4 years ago in the US, P&G on our Herbal Essences brand, we've launched tactile symbols to help differentiate shampoo from conditioner. So there was stripes for shampoo and dots for conditioner. And like also I recently mentioned, we've just in the UK launched our first brand with tactile with laundry detergent. I actually used RNIB to help me find blind people to test these symbols with. So I'd worked with the RNIB on the tactile side for, you know, many years before that. And then Kellogg's were the first company to introduce NaviLens on their brands. But what was really cool is that Kellogg's were inspired by a video that they saw on Herbal Essences talking about tactile. And they were so inspired by that, they wanted to go and do something in their brand. And that's when they contacted the RNIB and they piloted NaviLens. And as soon as they piloted NaviLens, I was so inspired by what Kellogg's had did, I contacted the RNIB as well to learn more about NaviLens. And yeah, it's just been evolving over time. It's a really good way to work.
Yeah, and I think that's a really good example about how RNIB and brands such as P&G and Kellogg's and other ones out there, we're all working together. Brands want to be as inclusive as possible because it's the right thing to do. And so, yeah, it's just a really good example about how, you know, collaboration really can bring about big change, not just in the UK, but around the world for blind and partially sighted people.
And Gareth, you mentioned change. RNIB has done a lot of work in the retail sector. Do you think that apps like NaviLens form an important part of what will be the shopping experience of the future?
Absolutely. I mean, the whole retail space, technology is increasingly forming a huge part of that. You know, we do a lot of shopping using our phones in store and out of store. So NaviLens and, you know, similar technologies really are becoming, you know, more mainstream by the day. So, yeah, because I think, you know, as we as a society become much more comfortable and familiar and, you know, technology is so embedded in our lives now, you know, that obviously just extends out to our shopping, you know, in this case, groceries. or health products or you know, shampoos or whatever it may be. It's just becoming the norm now. Apps like NaviLens, you know, over the coming years will just become the norm, I would suggest, for many people, not just those with sight loss either. You know, there's a lot of people in our society who struggle with literacy, for example, or whose English isn't their first language in a UK context. So these sort of apps have multiple benefits for many people, not just blind and partially sighted people.
And Sam, do you think that there are more ways that P&G can collaborate with RNIB, maybe to make things more equitable for blind and partially sighted people?
Yes, definitely. We can't do it alone. It has to be a partnership. You know, we need to work with the community that we're trying to serve. And the RNIB is a really helpful gateway to that community. And I think with things like NaviLens, the only way, you know, they're going to be successful is if more and more brands use them, because you're not just wanting to download NaviLens just to go and scan at a Pantene aisle or a Kellogg's aisle or, you know, Aunt Bessie's. When, as a blind consumer, you would want to use that phone. You want to see down all the aisles with all the products. The user experience has to be seamless for the blind community, and the RNIB needs to work across the industries to bring us all together and help to educate us on what we need to do as companies to be more inclusive. And NaviLens is one way, but it's a really phenomenal way.
Well, congratulations on the work that's been done so far. The NaviLens app is available now. Sam Lateef from Procter & Gamble and Gareth Davis from RNIB, thanks for joining us on RNIB Connect Radio.
Thank you very much.
Thank you.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag AskTechTalk.
Here's Tasneem now with a demo of how to copy and paste using iOS.
Let's take a look together of one of Connect Radio's content producers and copying his signature into a message. To do this, we will need to place our cursor where we're wanting to start from and then use the rotor to copy the information. The rotor can be accessed by placing one finger and then completing a semicircle.
Content Hal Davies.
Okay, let's access the rotor now.
So
we've got handwriting,
characters,
words,
lines,
speaking
rate, container, heading, link, form context selection.
That's the one that we want. So if
swipe right to expand selection, swipe left to shrink selection.
That's interesting. Let's do a one finger swipe up to see what that does.
Word selection.
So we've got a word selection, so we can select by word.
Character selection.
We can do it by character.
Select all.
We can select the whole email, which is not what I want.
Page selection.
I don't want the page selection either.
Line selection.
That's the one we want, so let's double click on the line.
Hal Davies.
Okay, so I think it's selected Hal Davies.
Hal Davies, selected.
Yep, we've got that confirmed. Let's see the next one.
Content producer, Cardiff, selected.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, we'll carry on.
Selected. On Freeview 730, online, selected.
Wonderful.
www.rnibconnectradio.co.uk and on smart. Selected.
Okay, so we've got a few lines selected. Let's do a one finger flick up and see where that takes us.
Unread. Reply.
Okay, that's not what I want.
Flag. Delete. Activate the unread.
Okay, let's do the rotor again. So we've selected that, so we need to copy it now.
Handwrite, so lower, character, word, line, speaking, second heading, link, formed text, edit.
Okay, we want edit, and then we'll do a one finger flick up.
Copy.
That's the one. We want to double click on that. Okay, so now we need to go to where we want to paste this information. So let's go into messages.
Messages.
And let's message. Compose a new message.
Edit. Message. Compose. To. To. Text. Add con. Result. Camera. To. Cancel. New message. New cancel. New message.
Okay, we want a new message. Message.
Apps. Camera. Result. Add con. To. Cancel. New message. New. Add con. Result. Camera app, subject message, text field, send message, tech insertion point at end.
Okay, let's get it back to the start. So we're in messages and now we want to paste this information. So we need to access the rotor again. So again, I'm going to place my finger anywhere on the screen and do like a semicircle with another finger.
Handwriting.
We've got handwriting.
Speaking. Heading, text select, typing mode, edit.
We've got edit, and then I'm going to do a one finger flick up.
Paste.
And we've got paste, so I'll double click
Al
that.
Davies, content producer, Cardiff, on Freeview 730, online www.renibconnectradio.co.uk and on smart. Send. Message.
Okay, that's most of the information which I selected. So that has worked, and I'm pretty impressed that that's done that, considering that this is a recent technique that I've learned. So if I can do it, you absolutely can. If you're new to copy and pasting on the iOS devices, and hopefully it should work similarly on the iPad too. I've copied and pasted several lines there, but actually it's great that the options are available where you can copy by character, by the whole page, word by word, so you would follow a similar process. It's exactly the same and you select your preference. I'm really curious to know how you use the copy and paste function, so please do let us know your thoughts and reflections at techtalk@rnib.org.uk. That's techtalk@rnib.org.uk.
We always love to hear from you here at Tech Talk. I mean, literally, we love to hear your voices. So you can send an audio note, a little voice recording. Just go into your voice memos app or however you record your voice and email that to techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And someone who has done that is Derry Lawler.
Hi, Dave, Tasneem and Callum. I hope you're all keeping well. Derry Lawler here from Dublin. I'm really enjoying your podcast. I should tune into the live show on a Tuesday sometime, but at the moment I'm enjoying the podcast. I took the plunge and I went for an iPhone 14 Pro Max, and I had an iPhone 12 Pro, which I loved, I must say, and it was still a good phone, but I went for the 14 Pro Max, and I'm really impressed with the speech quality. The sound is really clear and bassy over it. Mind you, when I did the setup from the iCloud, from back of my phone, came back up with no speech. So my wife went into voiceover settings and turned on my preferred synthesizer, and all worked. Callum, I enjoyed your demonstration, your interview of the Haber One. It's something I'm thinking of getting, I must say. But at the moment, I'm working from home, so I use the Focus 40 Blue here. Have the Orbit Writer, but find it a bit too small and pokey to be typing on. Yeah, so maybe in the future I might get myself the Haber One. Tasmin, I enjoyed your demonstration of the face ID. That's quite good, I must say. So keep up the good work and hopefully talk to you all soon. Cheers.
Derry Lawler there. Thanks so much for your feedback, Derry. We love to hear from you. And keep us posted how you're getting on with that new iPhone 14 Pro Max. And if you'd like to get in touch, techtalk@rnib.org.uk. And we hope to be hearing your voice on a future Tech Talk. The kitchen is probably the one room in our homes where we need to think about accessible technology the most. And joining me to explore this subject is, in fact, my wife, Emma. Hello.
Hello.
Hello. So I thought, as we were currently in the process of having our kitchen refurbished, and you know, I should say right out the blocks that we're very lucky to be in the position to be able to do that. And I understand that some of the choices we've made are not necessarily the cheapest options, but we've made these choices on the basis of we're looking for, you know, perhaps the most accessible experience that we can find, because you and I are both blind. We both need to use the kitchen, and we hope that by listening to this, it'll give you some inspiration if you're off to university next year, or maybe you're moving into a new property and you're thinking about your kitchen and what might be helpful in there. We hope that some of our choices might be useful. So I thought what we'd do, Emma, is maybe sort of go around the kitchen, maybe kind of anti-clockwise, and we'll start with the coffee machine, which I appreciate isn't part of the refurb, but I think I've mentioned our coffee machine. It's a bean to cup machine, and I think I've mentioned it on Tech Talk previously, but it's a DeLonghi, and it's very tactile, isn't it? It doesn't have any screens or anything.
No, it doesn't have screens. I mean, it has some lights, which sometimes we might need a little bit of assistance with. But in terms of the buttons, they are all tactile and they all depress, so you know when you've actually done something.
Now, clearly, you know, bean to cup coffee machine is going to be over the top for some folks, and we didn't always have one. I think we started off. We had the Tassimo. That's also very accessible.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, just tends to have two buttons, or one sometimes is a switch, which is the on-off switch or button, and then there's a button that you press to actually get it to make your cup of coffee.
Now, we have a fairly bog standard kettle, but I know one of the tips that you often like to share is to use a water dispenser.
So a few different companies now make hot water dispensers, or sometimes they're known as one cups. So Breville make what they call their Breville One Cup or Breville Hot Cup, where you would fill up the tank with water and then it boils the required amount of water and dispenses it into a cup. Now, you can get ones that have adjustable cup sizes, or you can get ones that have just one size, which tends to be around 250 mils, which is about average for a cup of tea or coffee. And the reason why I recommend these to lots of vision impaired people is that there's no pouring required. You fill it up, you put your cup under, you walk away, you can go and do something else. And it eliminates that part of the process that some people with sight loss find really quite difficult to manage. And then you don't necessarily need to use a liquid level indicator as well.
So moving on to the microwave then, we've got a fairly bog standard Morphy Richards microwave from Argos, a bit of an Argos special, but we like it because it's got sort of two tactile rotary dials and no other buttons. It doesn't talk, doesn't do anything fancy. I think it was about £60, and just really straightforward.
It is, and actually it's the one thing that I, as the kind of primary cook in the house, really decided that we weren't going to change when we were thinking about planning the new kitchen. So yeah, it has a time dial, and it has a power dial which goes from high power, and it clicks all the way around anti-clockwise to low power and defrost. So we have actually chosen not even to put any kind of tactile markings on our microwave. We use it in conjunction with some kind of assistant like Alexa or Google, and we would ask her to set a timer, and as she says starting now or he, then we would turn that time dial. So no bump-ons required in the kind of in the way that we use it.
Now, I know originally when we were thinking about the dishwasher, there are dishwashers with rotary dials on the front. We've gone for an integrated option. Now, we did see one with push buttons, but we struggled to find it again. So the one we've ended up with does have touch controls, but we can make that accessible.
So it has a list of programs along the top, and hopefully we can mark the most common programs that we need to use using Bumpond. And it also is able to be controlled by using an app with it as well. So Bumpons are fabulous in the sense that, you know, we can use different shapes. Some people use different colours. And one thing that I always say to people, because you can buy different round ones, but square ones, if we cut them across the middle diagonally, you can make two triangles, which are perfect arrow shapes.
There you go. If you want to turn the plus and minus or volume or something.
Yeah, absolutely.
Yeah, so that works with the Home Connect app, the Neff integrated dishwasher, but obviously your mileage may vary, so it's worth checking which app your device works with and finding out, is that app accessible? So let's move on then to the hob. Historically, we had a gas hob, and that was fine. We had big sort of rotary dial controls that we were able to turn, and you can hear the gas coming through. Bit of a faff to clean though, wasn't it? You had to take all the tops off and everything. So we decided we were going for this kind of clean lines thing with the new kitchen, and we wanted to look at some of the induction hobs. And I know that in the RNIB shop, you can buy the pan pickles, which is a sort of bendy piece of silicon that is adhesive and will stick to the top of the induction hob. Because if you imagine a, you know, flat piece of glass, a bit like your smartphone screen, that there's nothing really tactile to indicate where to put your pan. Now, the hob we've chosen has this sort of flex zone technology, so you don't have to be precise about where you position the pan when you put that on. So it gives us a little bit more of a kind of a margin of error. So roughly, as long as the pan's in the right place, it is going to work. And we actually went in store, didn't we? And we tried out the hob to make sure that we were able to use it, because there's another feature there as well that makes it accessible for us.
Yeah, so a lot of, especially integrated induction hobs, are just flat pieces of glass, so the controls are touch controls. And we might have, again, like we have with the dishwasher, been able to use Bumpons, different shapes, make ourselves some arrows to be able to control it. But actually, we wanted to see what we could find out there that, you know, might be a little bit more accessible out of the box. And so we came across a hob that has, it's like a round disc that magnetizes to the front of the hob, at the front in the middle, and you would press different quarters of this magnet to activate the part of the hob that you wanted to use, and then you spin it to control the temperature, and it bleeps as you spin it. So we have, like Dave said, used it in a showroom, and we managed to boil a pan of water. We're hoping we're going to get on with it. So it's going to be exciting to have a go at using something really quite new and innovative.
It's worth also mentioning that Smeg make a hob that has physical rotary controls, that is an integrated induction hob. I think one of theirs might meet that requirement. So always
also Beko, however you pronounce it, do as well. They make one with rotary controls too.
So always worth going into the showroom and trying to get hands on as many different devices as possible to make sure that you're going to be able to use it. The washing machine we've had for a while, it's a Siemens, I believe, and we've got the Braille panel on the front.
We have. So when I went and chose the washing machine I wanted, the gentleman in the shop, and I went to an independent shop, because, well, it's just that I think sometimes you it's good to support local business. So he phoned up the supplier, and they said yes, that they could make and supply a Braille panel for the front of the washing machine. And about 6 weeks after I bought it, an engineer came out from Siemens and swapped the panels over on the front. So the washing machine that we actually have is, it's a touchscreen washing machine. It has a dial, and around the dial it's got letters, and then we have a separate key on a piece of paper which tells us what all those letters, what the programs are. And then at the bottom of the screen, there are letters that indicate the buttons for things like changing the spin speed, the finish time so we can delay the wash, and the start button and things as well. So we slide our finger up from that letter at the bottom of the screen, and it bleeps when we press the button. So you could, if you wanted to, you could do a similar thing with bump ons. You could put a bump on next to the program that you might use most around the dial, and then you could use one for the start button at the bottom. And this might be useful maybe for people who are thinking about going to university, where they don't have a choice about what kind of washing machine they have. They have to use what is in their halls of residence or wherever they are staying. There are washing machines on the market that do have button controls rather than a touch screen, but lots of them are going in the touch screen direction.
You've used the guideline from Miele, which is available from RNIB. Mm-hmm. What would you say is the main difference then between, you know, sort of what we've got or the bump-on approach versus the Miele machine?
Okay, so basically they've adapted the interface on the front of one of their machines. So around the dial, it has dots. So there's not letters or numbers in the same way that there is on my machine. So you would have to know what program each dot was. You'd have to know like how many clicks round to turn the dial. But it's good in the sense that because it is still a touchscreen interface, there is a tactile line from the side of the circle that goes around the dial that you can follow, which guides you to where the start button is and also where there are other things that you can change, like the spin speed and the temperature and so on. And those are indicated with different shapes. So some of them are crosses, one of them is circles. And also the machine itself, when you change something like the spin speed, as you're making it faster, the pitch of the bleeps will get higher.
I noticed that, yeah, there's more variety in the different beeps that it makes as little ear cons or audio cues to reassure you. Let's come back to cooking then, because the talk of the town at the moment has to be the air fryer. Everybody seems to be getting an air fryer, and you think they're really good for blind people.
I do, just because you're dealing with a much smaller piece of equipment than an oven. Some people don't like the fact that when you open the oven door, you have a big wall of heat coming at you. If that's something you don't like, I recommend turning it off first, especially if it's a fan-assisted oven, because it will hopefully stop that happening a little bit. There's no bending required as well. It sits on the work surface. So if you are someone who struggles with anything like that, then you can access it much more easily. There's lots and lots of different ones out there on the market. There's touchscreen ones, which again, I would say you could use bump-ons to make it accessible to you. And some of them are app controlled as well. There are also some really, really simple ones out there on the market. We happen to have one that just has two dials. One of them controls the temperature, and it's in degrees, a little bit like an oven. And then one of them is the time dial. So what I tend to do with mine is I have it mostly set on 180 degrees. Most pre-prepared foods that you buy from the supermarket, like chips and fish fingers and so on, can all be cooked on 180. And then I will use some kind of assistant to set a timer. So the timer on the actual machine, I will just turn all the way round, but I will use an external timer in conjunction with what we're cooking. And then what I would recommend, and I would recommend this with anything in terms of cooking, is to be using the RNIB Talking Food Thermometer to make sure that your food is above 75 degrees, which means it should be okay to eat.
So for anyone who's not seen an air fryer, I mean, I've not seen many apart from ours. Those two dials that you spoke about, they're right on the top, and then the front, it feels like a sort of a basket thing that kind of
pulls out. Yeah, it's like a drawer that pulls out.
Yeah.
And in the bottom of the drawer, there is like a little stand. So any grease or crumbs will drop through to the bottom. But it also means that the food is much more aerated. And that's what it does, is it pushes the air around. So that it crisps food all over, hopefully.
Excellent. And they're not massively expensive, are they? I mean, we have talked about some higher end options in this conversation, but actually the air fryer that we've got, it's pretty reasonable.
Yeah, it's a 7 litre capacity one. So it's enough to feed maybe a family of three or four. And it costs around £90. There are cheaper ones. And there are smaller ones. So if you're someone that's living on your own, then you don't necessarily need one that large. You might choose to get something a little bit smaller. And I would always recommend that you go to somewhere like Currys or John Lewis and actually have a feel of them, so you can really get an idea of the kind of thing that you're looking at getting.
Yeah, it's a Tower, I think, ours.
Yeah, a Tower T17071.
Oh, there you go. Well remembered. Fantastic. Right. Is there anything I've not mentioned? I mean, of course, we've got the talking scales. The oven, of course, we can mark in the same way as some of those other appliances we've talked about.
We can, but we also know that with our oven, because we know somebody else who's got a very similar model to us, that Neff again will provide a braille panel for the front if we want it.
We've decided that for the flooring in the new kitchen, we're getting this material called Quick Step, which is going to be great for spillages because it apparently doesn't stain in anything. If you spill red wine, imagine that. If you drop, you know, spill a drop of something on there, you can wipe it up quite easily.
Yeah, absolutely.
And then the countertops, we decided we're not going to go for granite because that can be quite absorbent. And again, for us, you know, maybe we might not catch a spillage straight away or see where something is spilled straight away. So we've gone for something a little bit harder.
Yes.
Yeah,
we've gone for quartz.
And then, of course, the lighting is important. I think we've both got a little bit of light perception, not a lot of useful functional vision, but it's quite nice to have a little bit of extra light. So we've thought about that and made sure that we've got very even light across the room with sort of LED kind of spotlights, and then put some under cupboard lighting in there as well. And of course, as you know, we are sort of tech people and we're using our devices lots and lots, very important to get those extra USB ports in there as well, so that when we're sat at the breakfast bar, we'll be able to charge our phones and so on.
One thing I would say, going back to lighting, is that if that is something that you feel you need more of when you are working in the kitchen, if you're unable to do anything about the lighting in the ceiling or even your under cupboard lighting, you could just get something like an angle poise lamp and put that in your kitchen, just so it makes it a little bit easier for you to be able to see what you're doing.
Yeah, and there are folding lamps available in the RNIB shop as well, which might be useful, you know, if you're trying to look at a recipe book or while you're preparing some food, if you find having a little bit of extra light in that situation is helpful. Well, Emma, thank you so much. It's all very exciting. We're going to have to work very, very hard to make sure that we can pay for it all. But I hopefully we've made some good choices there. And we'd love to hear your choices as well. If you found a way to make your kitchen accessible, then we'd definitely love to hear about it on Tech Talk. Emma, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
And with Tasneem Arshad. Tasneem, what have you done to make your kitchen experience more accessible?
I've got a standard Samsung oven and hob. I chose that particular brand because the oven had dials on it and you can sort of click to the left or right and know and count exactly what those items are without necessarily needing to sort of label them. I kind of just remember where things are, so I found that fairly accessible, but I could put bonbons on if I needed to. But in terms of the hob, I've actually marked it with that kind of orange glow stuff that you get, and that's very accessible. So marking it up in that way, so I always know where the off switch is particularly helpful for me.
Is that the tacti mark, is it?
I think I didn't know what the official name was, but it's where you can feel, regardless of how much you clean it, it doesn't really come off. It takes quite a long time. So, yeah, it's tactilely marked, basically.
Right. And your hob, is it a gas hob then?
No, it's an electric hob.
Oh, right. Okay. And is it like an induction one, or are they flat rings, or are they raised? Like, can you feel where to put the pan?
You can. Yes, you can.
Yeah. Okay. So they're raised, or they're discernible by touch, because that is the challenge. And that's why we went for that Neff one, because we wanted that flex zone technology where it's a little bit less particular about where you position the pan. Now, in the RNIB shop, we do have a product called Pan Pickle. So if you've got one of those completely smooth induction hobs, you can place, it's like a bit of bendy silicon, feels a little bit like a small banana, and it's adhesive. And so you can stick it to the surface of an induction hob, and that will kind of describe the sort of the curved edge of the ring where you push your pan into, so it can be positioned accurately. You can always go back to the same spot.
Oh, that's really interesting, Dave, because I didn't even know you could get like the smooth, you know, induction hobs that you're talking about. I've just only ever seen the raised ones. So yeah, that's very interesting to know.
Yeah, that's the way it's going now. They just feel like a completely smooth sheet of glass, a bit like the screen of your iPhone, Tasneem.
Yeah, I can just imagine how difficult that would be for people who are blind and visually impaired. So it's great that there's actually adaptations around that.
Yeah, so you do have to consider your purchase carefully. And of course, if you can get into a showroom and try things out, and that was what we did, you know, to make sure that we could use this hob. You know, we went and boiled some water in the showroom to make sure that we were completely confident before it arrived.
Definitely. Sounds like a good plan.
All righty. Anything else in your kitchen, Tasneem, that we should know about?
There's a few other gadgets. I've got a mini chopper, but it doesn't really need, to be honest, it's totally accessible. It doesn't require any adaptations. It's very simple to use. And the other thing is the microwave, which again, just has the usual bonbons on. And similarly, I've got a 15-year-old washing machine, which is actually still going strong. And again, that's one of those ones that's got dials on. So you can just count, you know, what setting I want it on. And I use my note section on my iPhone to look at what the specific settings are, so it's fairly accessible.
Excellent. All right, well, we would love to hear your kitchen tips. How have you made your kitchen gadgets more accessible? Let us know. techtalk@rnib.org.uk. Tasneem Arshad, thanks a lot.
Thank you.
You're listening to Tech Talk on RNIB Connect Radio. Those of you who have been listening to the programme for a while will know that we're interested always to hear about innovations in the world of Braille technology. And one company that has been at the forefront of that is Bristol Braille Technology, a community interest company set up by Ed Rogers to develop Canute, the world's first multi-line Braille display. Welcome to Tech Talk, Ed. Why don't you just, for those who are not familiar with Canute and Bristol Braille, just sort of give us, you know, in a kind of a nutshell, the journey so far.
Certainly. And welcome back to Bristol Braille, Dave. When was the last time you were here?
It's been a while. Yeah. Old stomping ground.
Down in Bedminster in Bristol.
Indeed.
So the journey so far is we started building a multi-line Braille display back in, I think it was 2012. And we quickly realised we wanted to make something that was more than just affordable, but it also could do something quite different. So we went for a 9-line Braille display, a 360-cell design, and we called it the Canute. It took 8 years to come to market in the end, more or less. We released it around the end of 2019, start of 2020. It's the people out there who have been using their machines now for several years. And well, it's just really pleasing to see affordable multi-line Braille finally be in people's hands and be usable. So that's called the Canute 360. And like everyone else, the pandemic was a bit of a struggle to get through with the supply chain, but we did another release of more Canutes in 2021. And what we're doing now is R&D on just playing with the form of multi-line Braille and seeing what more you can do with it besides reading, because the machine was very much designed for reading. But now we're starting to use it as a display, and we're starting to do something a little more interesting.
Yeah, and we'll come on to that in a second. So traditionally, Braille displays, the Braille display that you might have at home, if you've got a Braille display, uses piezoelectric technology to actuate the pins that move up and down. It's a very fast at refreshing, but it's also very expensive, and those displays tend to be single line. We also, of course, are aware of, Orbit Reader and the work that's going on there. Your approach is slightly different. You don't use pins. You use sort of rotors that kind of spin round and then lift up to form, you feel the edge of two rotors basically make the Braille cells. So the Braille on Knut, as you said, you've got nine lines of 40 cells, and you've got that signage quality Braille, really solid, crisp, clear Braille. Now, due to the size of the machine, clearly it's a tabletop device. I guess it's sort of, 4 inches high, and then...
Well, it's 1 inch high.
Is it?
One and a quarter.
Oh, okay. Sorry. Yeah. And then what are the dimensions sort of front to back?
It's because, for the listeners at home, Dave is currently got the Knut up on a stand on the device we've been developing, which is a raised stand.
It's on a dock at the moment, right? Okay. Dock, yeah. And just so that people have kind of got a sense of this, the sort of the depth and the width.
So it's about 14 inches left to right.
Yeah.
About 7.5 front to back.
Yeah.
And about an inch and a third, inch and a quarter deep. And it's a desktop device, like you said. It weighs 2.8 kilos or 6 pounds.
So it's like a sort of small printer kind of size, I guess.
Yeah. It's about the sort of size and weight of a, it's certainly not the same height, but about the same footprint as a small inkjet.
Right, okay. Or a large sort of gaming laptop.
And most of that is the display itself, because 360 cells does take up quite a lot of space.
Yeah.
So it's... those 360 cells, like you said, aren't powered by piezoelectric. We have a technology of our own design. We use a technology called the Nathan disc, or the rotor. So we actually have only 100 actuators inside that Knut, driving to 2,160 dots.
Incredible. So we have quite a few connectivity options with Knut. You can load content on there using an SD card or a USB memory stick if you wanted to read a book in Braille. You've also got the ability to connect a screen and a keyboard, and we'll come on to that now. So you're thinking now, because I remember back in the day, Ed, we used to talk, at great length about, you've got a multi-line Braille display. It's something that everybody said they wanted, but what would you actually do with that? How would you use it? And we talked about maths quite a lot, and spreadsheets and tabulated information. I remember, was it a cricket league or a Premier League or something like that?
Premier League.
So sports scores, lots of tabulated information, and so we were thinking about more of the science, technology, engineering, those sorts of applications. I think we even put a little bit of music on there at one stage, but you've now taken this as sort of a step further.
Yes, I think a natural step, actually. So what we've got in front of us now, which you've been literally playing with, is the Knut Dock. This is an in-house prototype of something we're working on. This is just to experiment with the form and the medium, really, at the moment. This is not a product yet. The Knut Dock is, like you say, something where we have put in the ability to do multi-line text editing, to do word processing, to do... We've added some support in for spreadsheets, which in my geeky way I'm quite excited about the possibilities of that, for tables, the sort of stuff you were saying earlier about those sports tables and so on. And a lot of that adds up to being able to do spatial stuff and to do some programming. So having built that, I thought, well, let's try programming something on this. So we made a couple of video games. And what we've done now is we've made what we can cheekily refer to as a prototype Braille console, or maybe a Braille arcade. And We've just have played with a couple ideas so far, and so far we've built Snake. This is a tactile version of Snake. You don't need to know Braille, but Braille helps. It's about it's almost like pre-Braille skills, where you are, for those who don't remember or never used Snake, Snake was a game on mobile phones where you move the snake around and eat the pellets, and your snake grows longer. And this we've done on the Knut, and it's replicated on a big 13-inch monitor. You use a pull-out keyboard, and you can navigate around this physical space, this space that's 360 cells, which you can testify is quite a good space for getting some spatial awareness in.
Yeah, so the way it works is I had one hand on the multi-line Braille display, so on top of Knut. On the first line was the score, the current score, and then the head of the snake is represented by an equal sign in ASCII Braille, behind which there would be a trail of commas, which would get longer and longer as the snake grew from eating the pellets. And then my other hand would be on the QWERTY keyboard using the arrow keys to direct the movement of the snake to try and get to the pellets. So I actually got quite into this and a little bit sort of competitive. I was keen to set a new high score.
Yeah,
so
beat my score.
Yeah. So it was actually quite good. And like you say, you don't really need to be able to read Braille for that, because it's about feeling the whole page, moving your hand around. And what I found was, typically we read Braille with the tips of our fingers, not really the tip, the finger pad where your fingerprint is. But actually, when you're working with hard copy or maybe a tactile diagram, actually you use more of your hand. You tend to use sort of the sides of your hand, your other fingers, maybe other parts of your fingers, and perhaps to some extent, bits of your palm. And so I found myself doing this to kind of track the position of the snake and to line up the movement. So I thought it was really interesting from the point of view of developing the tactile skills that you might need to read a map, or even just to build a kind of an awareness of your environment. So that was Snake.
And you can, of course, build on that in either direction. You can try and make it, now you've established the principle that Snake works, it's at least engaging enough for me not to be able to get you off it for a while. And you could go more down the sort of the pre-Braille to Braille skills angle by making someone work through the alphabet and pick letters off one up by a time, or pick out words. Or you could try build it into more complex games and go more down the gaming route. So we've tried going down the gaming route a little bit more, again very early experiments, but by just making a city explorer. So this is a quickly generated map of Bristol. You could make a map of any city. These maps are automatically generated using some internal software that uses an open source mapping, and then you can move around that city. So you generate the map and then you move around it and you explore the city, and it tells you what street you're on. And what you're doing is you're moving around the white space inside a block of dots.
Yeah, and you're experimenting with both ways of rendering that. So on the one map you showed me, your vehicle or your person or whatever is navigating through white space in between full cells. And that represents the road. But then the other kind of version was almost like the inverse of that, where the roads were kind of marked out with dots, and then the white space was sort of off the road.
And the road in that instance was actually a word search, where you had to find the letters of the road and then move down it, which, given that the map was 2 miles by 2 miles, is probably the largest word search anyone's ever made. Maybe a little ambitious for where we're at. But being able to move around a city, any city, it just could be interesting on its own to know where things relate to each other.
Yeah,
and again, it's something that you can either start to go more in the direction of using it for building up spatial awareness, or you can start putting more actual gamifying into that and making it into something that's more of a gaming experience.
Yeah, and I was really interested in, and encouraged by this idea of gamifying those skills that we often need as blind people to learn you know, orientation, to learn tactile skills. And if you can make that fun and engaging, maybe, you know, through a game, then that's got potential. What's your hope then, Ed? So you've made this prototype, which is based on the existing Canute, by adding the monitor and the keyboard and the software and a dock there that the Canute sits in. I mean, is the ultimate goal to make that available for all existing Canute users, or is this still very much in the kind of sort of research phase?
It's in the research phase at the moment. And before we make it available, what we really want to do is to run a pilot where we take this on the road to people who get to try it. And remember, this isn't just the gaming. This you can flick from the game to the source code or the map. You can just edit the map that you want to move around and then go back to the game and see how that's changed. So you can, this is really meant to help people develop their computer science as well as pre-Braille skills and Braille skills. We want to take that out onto the road and use it with people, get some actual Braille using programmers to build some stuff for it, because there's only so much we can do in-house. We're a small company and we don't know everything about how this technology will work. We're just the ones that built it. It needs to go out on the road and people need to try it. And we're currently putting together partners who can work with us to take that out, so we can build a number of these devices, call it a Braille arcade if you like, and then take it out and see how people like it, see what people want to program on it, and take it from there.
Okay, so if folks are interested and want to learn more and hopefully contribute ideas or code or ask questions, what's the best way to get in touch?
Best way to get in touch is on our website. We're going to be updating the website soon, and indeed our newsletter subscribers, with our next steps for this pilot. So get on the site before then, and either email us, that's enquiries@bristolbraille.org, or you can sign up to our newsletter, which is on the top of the website.
Ed Rogers from Bristol Braille Technology, thanks very much. We're almost at the end of another Tech Talk. It just remains for me to thank our co-hosts, Callum Stoneman and Tasneem Arshad. Appreciate your company again, guys. Cheers.
Bye for now.
Thank you. Same time next week.
Indeedy. We'll be back on RNIB Connect Radio next Tuesday at 1. And you can hear us again Thursday at 9 or wherever you get your podcasts. From me, Dave Williams, and the rest of the Tech Talk team, until next time, bye for now.
If you have a technology question, why not ask the Tech Talk team? Email now, techtalk@rnib.org.uk, or tweet at RNIB Radio using the hashtag #AskTechTalk.